The last time I spoke about the Quran, I mentioned that I originally read the Quran for myself because I didn't trust the media narratives about what was in it. I also mentioned that looking at the primary sources and researching some historical and literary context is generally much more useful and accurate than the overly simplistic and often heavily politicized media coverage of Islam. I covered in my previous podcast what the Quran says about Mary, the mother of Jesus. I want to move on to discussing what the Quran says about Jesus himself. There are plenty of references to Jesus in the Quran, and I won't read all of them, but I will try to share with you as many as practically possible. I don't want to leave out anything that detracts from understanding the whole story of Jesus in the Quran. One thing I should mention before I get too far into this is that I am not an expert in Quranic studies. I am not an authoritative source of information about Islam, though I try to learn from reading the Quran, reading various Islamic perspectives on the Quran, and reading the Hadith, the sayings of the Prophet. I am continuing to read and learn about the Quran and related subjects like Islamic law and its basis in the Hadith, as well as Islamic mystical traditions. If you want to know more about the Quranic passages, Gnostic texts, and biblical references I will be mentioning in this podcast, please see the link to my blog, where you can find links that will take you to additional information on those points as I read and comment on the portions of the Quran which reference Jesus. And if you want to know which interpretation and translation of the Quran I used, that's available on the sources page of my blog. Now, of the many references to Jesus in the Quran, there are some very important ones in the Surah on Mary, which is the Surah I was reading at the end of the previous episode. Some of these references to Jesus in the Maryam Surah are not related to Mary directly or to the infancy narrative of Jesus, but are part of the larger discourse about the unfortunate fate of unbelievers, who are known as kafir in Arabic. I'll now read the continuation of the story of the birth of Jesus from the Maryam Surah that I was reading from last time. And they say, "The All-Merciful has taken unto himself a son. You have indeed advanced something hideous. The heavens are well nigh rent of it, and the earth split asunder, and the mountains well nigh fall down crashing, for that they have attributed to the All-Merciful a son. And it behooves not the All-Merciful to take a son." This passage of the Quran is a quite pointed and explicit denial of Jesus being the Son of God, which follows immediately after the narrative of his conception and birth and the miracles being performed by him as an infant. But this is more than just a competing intellectual claim operating in reaction to Christian doctrines that were common on the Arabian Peninsula at the time. It's not just that arguments are given for why it's absurd that Jesus would be the Son of God, but also that it is such an astoundingly blasphemous claim in the eyes of Muslims that it is appropriate to describe it in terms of natural catastrophes of near unimaginable scope the kind of natural catastrophes that destroy entire civilizations, perhaps even an entire species. And this tells us something about how important it is for Muslims to ensure that people don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. The Maryam Surah isn't the only surah that presents Christian beliefs about Jesus as having severe consequences. The surah The Table, Al-Ma'idah in Arabic, features a similar discourse that makes the importance of the denial that Jesus could be the Son of God even more obvious. So now I'll read more about Jesus from The Table Surah. They are unbelievers who say, God is the Messiah, Mary's son. For the Messiah said, Children of Israel, serve God, my Lord and your Lord. Verily, whoso associates with God anything, God shall prohibit him entrance to paradise, and his refuge shall be the fire, and wrongdoers shall have no helpers. They are unbelievers who say, God is the third of three. No God is there but one God. If they refrain not from what they say, there shall afflict those of them that disbelieve a painful chastisement. Will they not turn to God and pray his forgiveness? God is all forgiving, all compassionate. The Messiah, son of Mary, was only a messenger. Messengers before him passed away. His mother was a just woman. They both ate food. Behold how we make clear the signs to them, then behold how they perverted are. Unlike the Maryam Surah, the consequences in the Table Surah are eternal spiritual consequences. The Quran makes it clear that Christians will be denied entry to paradise and will be cast into the fire, Al-Nar in Arabic, which is another name for Jahannam, the Islamic equivalent of what is generally known as hell in English. Interestingly, the Quranic narrative presents Jesus himself as the one who makes it clear that those who keep these Christian beliefs about his divinity will be condemned to everlasting torment in the fire. It goes on to address the Christian doctrine of the Trinity, and that belief in three persons in one Godhead is also said to result in severe consequences for those who believe it. Not only that, but the last part of this passage makes it clear that Christians have perverted the teachings of God about who Jesus is. This, of course, is part of why it's necessary for Muslims to convert Christians to Islam. It's not just a matter of having as many people as possible in the club. If you believe the Quran is correct, that believing these things will cause people to suffer everlasting torment in Jahannam, then you have a moral duty to try to stop them from believing those things. So it makes perfect sense that my friends who are Muslims would encourage me to convert to Islam. From their perspective, my soul is in serious danger because of my current beliefs. I appreciate their concern, and I'm certainly not offended that they would want to try to encourage my study of Islam. Frankly, I would be more offended if they didn't care enough to try to keep me out of hell by persuading me to change my beliefs about who Jesus is. Speaking of Jesus, later in the surah, The Table, Jesus is mentioned again, and I'll read that passage now. The day when God shall gather the messengers and say, What answer were you given? They shall say, We have no knowledge. Thou art the knower of the things unseen. When God said, Jesus, Son of Mary, remember my blessing upon thee and upon thy mother. When I confirmed thee with the Holy Spirit to speak to men in the cradle and of age, and when I taught thee the book, the wisdom, the Torah, the gospel, and when thou createst out of clay by my leave as the likeness of a bird, and thou breathest into it, and it is a bird by my leave, and thou healest the blind and the leper by my leave, and thou bringest the dead forth by my leave, and when I restrained from thee the children of Israel, when thou camest unto them with the clear signs, and the unbelievers among them said, This is nothing but sorcery manifest. And when I inspired the apostles, Believe in me and my messenger, they said, We believe, witness thou our submission. And when the apostles said, O Jesus, Son of Mary, is thy Lord able to send down on us a table out of heaven? He said, Fear you God, if you are believers. They said, We desire that we should eat of it, and our hearts be at rest, and that we may know that thou hast spoken true to us, and that we may be among its witnesses. You may have noticed the reference to birds made out of clay becoming alive when Jesus breathed on them. That comes from the Infancy Gospel of Thomas, a text from the 2nd century popular among Gnostics, though it was probably written during the same century as the Proto-Evangelium of James, which fits well with the canonical Gospels. The Infancy Gospel of Thomas presents a very different Jesus than what is consistent with the Synoptic Gospels in the New Testament. Interestingly, the narrative about the birds coming to life because Jesus breathed on them would have been seen as a sign of divinity by someone familiar with the Genesis creation narratives, in which the breath of God is what brings to life Adam, the first man. But that divinity is explicitly denied in the Quranic narrative, and the Jesus of the Quran is the one who denies it. We see that denial once again in the next passage from the table, Surah. Said Jesus, Son of Mary, O God, our Lord, send down upon us a table out of heaven that shall be for us a festival, the first and last of us, and a sign from thee, and provide for us. Thou art the best of providers. God said, Verily I do send it down on you, whoso of you hereafter disbelieves, verily I shall chastise him with a chastisement wherewith I chastise no other being. And when God said, O Jesus, Son of Mary, didst thou say unto men, Take me and my mother as gods, apart from God? He said, To thee be glory. It is not mine to say what I have no right to. If I indeed said it, thou knowest it, knowing what is within my soul. And I know not what is within my soul. Thou knowest the things unseen. I only said to them what thou didst command me. Serve God, my Lord, and your Lord. The Quranic narrative has Jesus explicitly denying not just his own divinity, but also denying the divinity of Mary, which is something the overwhelming majority of ancient Christians would have denied as well. Either this passage wasn't directed at them, or the author had a fundamental misunderstanding of ancient Christian beliefs about Mary. Another possibility is that it was a reaction against the Chlorideian sect that worshipped Mary in 4th century Arabia and may still have been known to Muhammad in the 600s. Mary isn't the only woman mentioned in the Quran, and several mentions occur in another surah, a surah which, like the table, appears early in the Quran. This surah, in which Christian doctrines are also explicitly denied, is entitled The Women, Al-Nisa in Arabic. I'll go ahead and read the portion of The Women surah that mentions Jesus. So, for their breaking the compact, and disbelieving in the signs of God, and slaying the prophets without right, and for their saying, Our hearts are uncircumcised. Nay, but God sealed them for their unbelief. So they believe not, except a few. And for their unbelief, and their uttering against Mary a mighty calumny, and for their saying, We slew the Messiah, Jesus, son of Mary, the messenger of God. Yet they did not slay him, neither crucified him. Only a likeness of that was shown to them. Those who are at variance concerning him surely are in doubt regarding him. They have no knowledge of him, except the following of surmise. And they slew him not of a certainty. No, indeed, God raised him up to him. God is almighty, all wise. There is not one of the people of the book, but will assuredly believe in him before his death, and on resurrection day he will be a witness against them. The people being referred to in this passage as having broken the covenant, disbelieving God's signs, killing the holy prophets, committing calumny against Mary by saying that she wasn't a virgin, and claiming to have killed Jesus are the Jews. The Quranic narrative insists that Jesus never actually died, but rather that God raised him up alive, and that Jesus will subsequently return during the end times. And at that point, he will apparently be a witness against the Jews for their sins against God. Some Islamic commentators on the Quran go beyond the bare text of the Quran and insist that someone else was crucified in place of Jesus, which is a view taken in some Gnostic texts, like, for example, the Apocalypse of Peter, which plainly states that someone else was substituted for Jesus on the cross. And this would neatly explain why it would only appear to people that he had been crucified and died. After all, maybe no one looked very closely at the guy bleeding out while nailed to the cross. That's not exactly a comfortable thing to look at. But it does completely contradict the biblical account of the crucifixion, in which several people who knew Jesus very well, including his mother Mary, were present quite close to the cross on which Jesus was crucified. There are even more references to Jesus than we've heard so far. Some of them are in the House of Imran surah. The following passage is the last part of the House of Imran surah's account of the angel's announcement to Mary about the child she would soon conceive and bear under a palm tree. And he will teach him the book, the wisdom, the Torah, the gospel, to be a messenger to the children of Israel, saying, I have come to you with a sign from your Lord. I will create for you out of clay as the likeness of a bird. Then I will breathe into it, and it will be a bird by the leave of God. I will also heal the blind and the leper, and bring to life the dead, by the leave of God. I will inform you, too, of what things you eat and what you treasure up in your houses. Surely in that is a sign for you, if you are believers. Likewise, confirming the truth of the Torah that is before me, and to make lawful to you certain things that before were forbidden unto you. I have come to you with a sign from your Lord, so fear you God, and obey you me. Surely God is my Lord, and your Lord, so serve him. This is a straight path. The house of Imran contains many of the same points that are present in the table, Surah, but has an added point that certain things that were unlawful, haram in Arabic, have been made lawful, halal in Arabic, which seems to be a reflection of early Christian beliefs about Gentile converts not being required to abide by the laws of the Torah. The House of Imran Surah goes on to tell us more about Jesus and the apostles, so I'll read that next. And when Jesus perceived their unbelief, he said, "Who will be my helpers unto God?" The apostles said, "We will be helpers of God. We believe in God. Witness thou our submission. Lord, we believe in that thou hast sent down, and we follow the messenger. Inscribe us therefore with those who bear a witness." And they devised, and God devised, and God is the best of devisers. When God said, "Jesus, I will take thee to me, and will raise thee to me, and I will purify thee of those who believe not. I will set thy followers above the unbelievers till the resurrection day. Then unto me shall you return, and I will decide between you as to what you were at variance on. As for the unbelievers, I will chastise them with a terrible chastisement in this world and the next. They shall have no helpers." The idea that Jesus will come back at the end times and that God will set the record straight about how Jesus is a Muslim appears here in the House of Imran Surah, just as it did in other surahs. Naturally, we find additional mentions of the severe consequences which await unbelievers. The Quranic narrative about Jesus in the House of Imran Surah continues with another explicit denial of Christian beliefs about Jesus, which I'll read to you. "This we recite to thee of signs and wise remembrance. Truly, the likeness of Jesus in God's sight is as Adam's likeness. He created him of dust. Then said he unto him, Be. And he was. The truth is of God. Be not of the doubters. And whoso disputes with thee concerning him, after the knowledge that has come to thee, say, Come now, let us call our sons and your sons, our wives and your wives, ourselves and yourselves. Then let us humbly pray, and so lay God's curse upon the ones who lie. This is the true story. There is no God but God, and assuredly God is the Almighty, the All-Wise. And if they turn their backs, assuredly God knows the workers of corruption." In this passage, the Quranic narrative emphasizes that Jesus is a man, just like Adam, and that the appropriate response to the Christians who claim that Jesus was uncreated and co-eternal with God the Father is to pray for God to curse them for their lies against God. Unsurprisingly, this is immediately followed by a classical Islamic formulation which asserts the oneness of God. The Quran has many interesting things to say about Jesus, and on the whole, these statements are an interesting blend of the appropriation of, and also rejection of, early Christian beliefs, a surprising number of them from Gnostic sources. In the Quranic narratives about Jesus, we see even more starkly that an important part of the project of Islam is to reform existing monotheistic religions, meaning the Christians and Jews, and restore them to the true faith in the one God, while acknowledging many of the good things about those religions. Setting aside the obvious impact of the military prowess of the Prophet Muhammad and his companions in spreading Islam, that acknowledgement of the good things in Judaism and Christianity may well be part of why Islam has been so successful in making converts. At the very least, the argument that Islam is the fulfillment of God's messages in the Torah and the Gospels is certainly a common one used by Muslims to persuade Christians to convert and therefore avoid the everlasting fire. Well, we've now come to the end of the podcast, and I hope you found it helpful in understanding the Quran and better understanding the Islamic tradition's understanding of who Jesus is and what his role will be on the day of resurrection. On the next podcast related to the Quran, I'll examine many more things the Quran says about Jews, Christians, and unbelievers. If you subscribe to the podcast, then you can listen to it as soon as it's published rather than having to wait until I get it posted with the sources. Thanks for listening and have a lovely evening.